RadioInfluence.com.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
It's Thursday, April 5th. If it's Thursday, it's another edition of the Landry Football Podcast on LandryFootball.com. Appreciate you joining us as always. Want to remind you at the top, before it slips my mind, got any questions or topics you want me to address, send them in. You can get the reach me through the contact Chris on LandryFootball.com. Go to LandryFootball.com, hit LandryFootball.com, hit contact Chris, and send me an email. Something you want me to address. We've got a couple of them we're going to answer today. And that's what we want to do here. You know, we want to provide some things for you that you find interesting. It is always a challenge for somebody like me to, what can we cover here on the podcast? What can we cover at LandryFootball.com that you want? This is why this podcast and this website was started. We started it a few years ago as an offshoot of what I do for NFL teams. Now, you know, probably want to continue to scouting for maybe another 10 years, depending on health and working for teams. But I think doing stuff for fans is fun, and it's hopefully enlightening and different to where we can provide certain things for you, take you a peek inside a draft room, a coach's meeting room. How do we do this or that? What we want to do here. So that's what LandryFootball.com was started for and what we're trying to do in our mission. We need help because I'm here to service you. It's not like, you know, when I'm doing stuff for teams, and I'm doing it for the people that own the teams, that run the teams, this is what they need. And so when you grade a player, it's with the purview of what they're looking for. And you know, going out and speaking and helping and teaching, giving clinics and seminars to help team scouts and coaches, you know, doing coaching searches, all that stuff. That's all fine for teams and it's great, but wanting to provide some of that stuff for you is what we're trying to do without infringing on the integrity of the work I'm doing with them. This is what we try to do. So, and while we're mentioning that, we've got just a little more time for you to take advantage of our fantastic offer. The best discount we've ever had. Folks, if you sign up now, you get the draft coverage, the draft boards, the scouting reports, all the free agent information, the daily notebooks, all the latest information from around college football, the NFL, the draft, recruiting, you name it. Yeah, we got recruiting stuff, spring practice stuff in our notebooks every day. Want to make sure that you take advantage of that, because if you do, right now, you get the entire football season for free. Yeah, I said it, for free. In essence, it's $39.99 for an entire year. I mean, we're discounting it so far. We do that to give you an opportunity to get a feel for what we do. You know, it's always, you know, what do you do? How do you do it? You can explain it. I've tried to hear. You got to come in and see it. You don't want to do that. You want to try it for a month. Got a monthly rate. There are different ways you can go about it. So take advantage of it right now. Our retention rate, if people come, they stay. I mean, it's good. It's a lot of information. And we try to address things that you want to address. We take you inside the film room. We give you analysis on the college and pro game from a coaching and scouting perspective and provide inside information that others, you know, reporters do a phenomenal job. You know, when you have access to inside information because you're working it, you got a little bit more information. Some of it, quite frankly, that I can't share. But what I can share is still unique and helpful and useful, I think. At least that's the feedback we're getting. So anyway, check us out, LandryFootball.com, and follow us here on the Landry Football Podcast. Follow me on Twitter, by the way. Do that. Let's just see if you can't do that. Share your friends. Follow me on Twitter, @LandryFootball, and we'll see if we can increase our family of friends here and supporters here. Okay. Something that I wanted to get into, and, you know, I apologize. Sometimes I like to keep this, and I need to do a better job of keeping this podcast going and a little tighter. So we don't keep you too long and make sure that you get the things that you want. And in doing so, gotten a little too long, pardon me, on being able to address the league rules, which is a last week topic, but a lot of things were going on, couldn't get to it. And I thought this would kind of go into something that I really wanted to get into. And it was, don't want to focus on the targeting rule or now the lowering of the head rule in the NFL so much. I think you've heard a lot of that, but I wanted to take it deeper and why these rules are taking place. Well, first of all, on the surface, the reason why these rules are taking place is anything that's going to make the game safer, not safe, safer, because you're not going to eliminate injuries out of this sport, this great sport that we have. It's volatile. It's physical. We love it. There are a lot of injuries that take place. So I want to, you know, take you back quickly. In the early 1900s, the sport was a brutal sport. Well, like boxing was. There would be bare knuckle fighting and people would die. There was a time in the early 1900s where the sport of football was so brutal. And again, they didn't have pro football. Pro football didn't exist. But college football, it was basically like rugby. There was no forward pass. And there were no helmets. Helmets, the leather helmets came in a little later. And they would wear certain protective gear of hats of sorts, not protection whatsoever. And we're talking not broken bones, but we're talking severed spines. I apologize. We were talking about people. There was only about 30 college programs playing college football. And in like a 1 week period, there were 1 week of football with so few teams playing. There was like 12 deaths in 1 year. Can you imagine but back then, 12 deaths, you know, now there's a couple of things. It was obviously no protection. It was brutal. You had no concept of how to treat players. So, you know, somebody come on the sidelines or another player would pick a guy up. Well, you know not to do that. Now you put them on the board, you stabilize them, hey, yank them. And sometimes that would basically be the cause of death after the injury. So my point was, it was a brutal game. And President Roosevelt decided, Teddy Roosevelt, our 26th president, decided he loved the game of football. The sport was going to be abolished. Everyone wanted it abolished. And he stood fast because he liked football. He participated in it recreationally in college. So he got together with the powers that be and coaches and got them to change some of the rules and have the forward pass. In essence, it made it safer. That's where I'm going with it. It made it safer. Not safe, you know, but safer. It saved the sport. The sport was dying. And then he helped some of the better coaches. And I'm going to get into this more one day because, as I mentioned, I tend to get long-winded, where a lot of the players, you know, learned how to play the game a little bit more technique-oriented, a little bit more skill-oriented, and it wasn't quite just the brute sport. But my point was, it made it safer. Now, let's forward to today. Then I want to take you through the history. We'll do that at some point. I think it may be interesting. Let me know if you want to know more about that and how some of the best coaches, the sport was started in the Northeast. And then some of the better coaches got recruited to go out west, Stanford, USC. Howard Jones, great Yale coach, went out to USC, started the first great USC program. I get into some of that. We'll get into some of that in the off season or in some of the slower news season. There is no off season in football. Shame on you, Chris. So the forward modern era. Let's go back to the 70s. The Mel Blount rule. A corner could take a receiver and drive him into second, third row. Well, it's physical. I can remember when they changed that rule. Oh, my goodness. What are we going to do now? How are you going to defend guys? I don't get it. Well, everybody adjusted. So I know there's a lot of frustration that's coming along with football today. It's too soft. It's too easy. I get it. And I don't fundamentally disagree. But folks, we're in a different age. Remember that players that played in the 1900s, the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, even in the 50s, those players, you never heard from them. They finished, people would hear occasionally in the modern, the information age, we know everything, right? But you didn't find out in the 60s or the 70s. Maybe you see a blurb in the paper about somebody dying. A lot of football players died at very young ages. Why? Well, don't you think that CTE and brain damage and other problems that are here today, don't you think they existed before? It's kind of like people, you think cholesterol was invented, 10 years ago? Of course not. It was always there. It's just as it wasn't defined as that. It wasn't called that. So the problems existed, but we didn't hear about it. Now we're in an era where players that played in the 60s and 70s, and now even in the 80s, they're getting older and they're dying off and they're having problems. And we know about it. We've got a news media and people that are aware of it. So we all know about it. And then many of them started to donate their brains to science and they found out this is the cause. This is what happened. So now we're at an information age. So the information age brings in what? Lawsuits. Players' families, you weren't warned properly of the dangers. We knew it was going to be physically debilitating. We knew we might have some knee problems and hip problems. We had no idea we'd have brain problems, they say. And they're suing the league. And the league, feeling that they would lose their shirt, settling out of court. And it is massive, the costs. Folks, all of these rules are rooted in litigation or the prevention of litigation or to aid if you are litigated against. To show, look, we've made every rule to not use the helmet, to not lower your head, to not do this and that. That's where it's headed. Now, for college football, nobody's suing yet. It's coming. You don't have College Football Players Association. You don't have the protection for the college athletes. And college athletes don't play as long, but the reality is a lot of these injuries are a cumulative effect of playing junior high football, high school football, college football, maybe 4, 5, 6 years in the NFL. And it does certainly depend upon the position you played and whatnot. And I do think that some of the rule changes will lessen the degree of some of the injuries. There's never going to eliminate. So why am I giving this diatribe on all of this? Well, very simply, is to say, like it or not, this is where it's headed, okay? Because this is the game. These are going to be the rules. They're not going to go back, because going back is going to make the game of football even more attacked by people in the media, and the rate of which young players, young kids starting football, it's getting less and less every year. It's a 12% reduction every year. You start to accumulate that over 20, 25 years, and you're going to have a significant effect over time. Not immediately. Doesn't mean the popularity of the game's not going to change. People are going to still love to watch it, but how many are going to want to play it? How many parents are going to let their kids play it? Going to be a problem. Going to be a big problem, and it's going to siphon up less junior high school kids, less high school kids playing football, less college players playing football, and the quality eventually will affect the NFL. So it could affect the game. It's not going to affect it to where the sport's going to be eliminated, because there's too much money to be made for the sport to be eliminated. That's never going to happen. But if the money, if there's too much cost, too much money to lose in litigation over lawsuits, you best believe there are going to be rule changes. There will be rule changes. So I always say, if you don't like the way the game is going, find something else to do in the fall, because it's not going to change. This is the byproduct of everything that's being done. I also want to mention that, people are concerned about lowering the head in which that's going to have an effect on the game. Rightly so. How are they going to enforce that? Players are going to duck their head, you know, an inordinate amount of time. Here's what I think is going to happen, because I don't know. Until you see, you don't know with certainty. What I think is going to happen is they're going to be prudent in trying to get players that lower their head to tackle or lower their head to make contact offensively. They're going to enforce that severely. The ones that lower their head, maybe out of harm's danger, they're not going to call everything. It's impossible, because they would have to stop the play most every play. What they're going to have to do is they're going to have to call it enough to get lowering the head out of the game of football. It's as simple as that. It's something that has to get out of football. And let me explain something. You know, people who say, boy, lowering the head and delivering a hit, that's good football. Wrong. Somewhere along the line, and I'll tell you why, but somewhere along the line, people thought lowering the head and delivering the hit with the head was a way to tackle. It's not the way you tackle. It's never been the way you tackle. It's poor tackling form. It causes you to miss tackles. It's the reason why we have so many missed tackles. Why do guys want to deliver the kill shot? Well, the same league and the same media that criticizes the rule, the same ones and the same media that criticizes all the injuries are the ones that show the kill shot on highlights. Well, that's what kids want to do today, right? They don't want to catch the football. They want to dance in the end zone. They don't want to tackle properly, because that's going to not make the highlights. You want to give the, what did Ronnie Lott used to say, the woo shot, where people say, woo, deliver the kill. That's not good tackling. Good tackling is face up. See what you hit, hit what you see. But over time, poor tackling has become part of the game. And the worst coach sport at the youth level is football. And the worst aspect of youth football coaching is tackling, poor tackling technique. In fact, much so that the league has tried to come up with a program. And if you've heard some of the promos, it's called heads up. Heads up is not just a term. It's heads up. Get your head up. See what you hit what you see. If you are tackling with your head down, you are missing your target of where you want to tackle the guy. If you are got your head down, you cannot see where the pressure's coming from. And oftentimes lowering of the head increases the chance of losing the football. Head up, see it. Your reaction skills of protecting the football is that much better. Less footballs, more pressure points covered. Folks, it's poor fundamental football. So the only problem I see, I commend the getting the bad tackling out, but we got to teach tackling better. And we don't teach tackling. Why? We don't put pads on football anymore. We don't have real spring practice in high school football. We have very limited practice and pads in college football. We have limited practices, only 18 in pads in the NFL. How are you going to teach tackling? You don't. It's hard. You don't do it enough. You don't practice the skill enough. You're not going to be good enough at it. There you go. So we got bad tackling. It's a tackling problem. It's a poor technique, and it's leading to injuries. We need to get it out. Okay, football people are making these decisions, trust me, and they're saying it. It's real. The owners are saying also it's costing us a fortune, and we've got to make the game safer. All real problems we need to solve. The issue is how we go about enforcing it. It's going to be tough for officials to do it on the field. They're going to use the aid of replay. So that's going to allow the ability to be able to catch something quickly or not. By the way, replay. I want to address something as we're talking about technology. I want to shift this over to as we enforce this rule and enforce all rules. The biggest problem that we have in this rule, I don't think, I hope people understand with me explaining it, the importance of getting the poor tackling form and very injurious tackling form out of the game. That's not good football, but better tackling the proper way with physical hitting is good. I would hope everyone would agree with that. I am with everyone that is fearful that, oh my God, how are we going to officiate this? This is going to be all the time. It's going to stop the game. We're going to throw people out the game, and it's going to be poorly officiated. That's a real concern. I got it too. I'm raising my hand with you. But let me say this, so I want to transition this to conversations about officiating, technology, replay, the improvement of what we can do. Folks, if you don't embrace technology, you're going to be doomed from it. Technology's here. It's going to be used among TV. It's going to be used from the people that watch the game. We have to use it to make the game better. Where I think we're missing the boat, but I think we're getting moving towards, is moving the game upstairs. Having officials on the field should always, obviously got to be there in position to see something in real time and close proximity. You can catch something. But to think an official is going to see something on the field and in real time with the speed, it's unrealistic. So where I think we're headed and we're in the process of doing it is we need to have the video technology at every game, major college, the NFL, this is big business, folks, have the video technology up in the booth and in a centrally located office. In the NFL, it needs to be in the central office in New York. In college football, there needs to be uniform officials. I think the NFL should pay for the development of officials, make it more full-time pay, allow people to have other jobs and businesses if they want to, but pay full-time, training. And there needs to be a college football officials, not SEC officials, Pac-12 officials, Big 12 officials, but college football officials. I think we need to condense the rules a little bit and make them more the same. And I think we need to train them and get better officials on the field that are better trained. And as they're on the field, we're going to have a centrally located office for college football. That's what I would like. And you have the technology not only in the booth at game day, but in the centrally located office where in real time, as a play's taking place, with the push of a button, somewhat everyone's communicated with the officials with a piece in their ear, the group at the stadium. Got to have a group at the stadium if communication goes down for whatever reason. We know that can happen. Even today, cell phones don't have great connection everywhere, right? So you got to have the ability to do this. Upstairs, you got to have it where there is an immediate person on the sideline that direct communication could go in and stop the game if you had to in an emergency. But there should be a button that presses it to where everyone can hear. So basically, here's how it would go. Official makes a call on the field. They're moving. They're going to spot the football. Press of a button. You say, hey, John, you got that wrong. It was not holding. It was holding. It was a fumble. It was not a fumble. The ball's at the 26-yard line going in. Let's go. Boom. They're getting it in their ear. They're putting it down. You know, move on. Boom. There's the game. You're not stopping the game. The official's not coming looking at a tablet on the sidelines for 5 minutes, slowing down the game every time. Let that be done with highly digitized, you know, video upstairs and in the centrally located office, and make that decision rendered quickly and correctly. They could be looking at the replay while the official's moving on the field. The time between he moves on the field, you know, blows his whistle, walks, you know, jogs over to the sideline, gets the information, talks. All that could have been done by the people in the booth and the people in the centrally located office. You take away 3-4 minutes here, 3-4 minutes there, 3-4 minutes the other place, all of a sudden, you got a much quicker game and a much better officiated game. That's where I think we need to head. I think the final decision needs to come from the guy that can see it at every angle and say, look, this is the call. This is what we need to go with. Boom. I think that's where we need to go. And so I think that as it relates to calling this penalty and throwing guys out the game, I think this too. You look at it. Guys, we need to have more. I don't want to create more ambiguity. Want less ambiguity. Guys get in a fight and scrap. They're warned. Boom. Throw them both out. You can see stuff on replay. when you're trying to separate guys and fists and legs are flying and fly, you don't know what's going on. You can't see everything. You're focusing. The eye in the sky can tell you quickly, can tell you accurately. We need to use it. So it's my thoughts on we've got to get the game healthier, safer, better officiated, more efficiently officiated, get the stoppage of non-action handled better and more accurately. The rules simplified, rules have more. Look, we really need to have 1 feet or 2 feet in to catch the football. Let's have a come together of the sport of football. Let's have the NFL gets tremendous advantage of getting their farm system being college football. I have called out the NFL for saying you should be responsible, at least largely financially, for putting together a developmental system for officials. We complain about officials. Tough job. Don't pay very well. We don't give them much respect. Who wants to be an official? How many ex-football players that are looking for work, want to stay in the game, would be interested in staying in football, getting into officiating? If the money was really good, the benefits were really good, pay them. Get them part of the benefits plan. Needs to be done in the NFL, and I think the NFL needs to put together, fund some money to where college football, there needs to be a college football association form where there is a head of officiating. I know there is one now, but a head of officiating where all officials are trained, and we need to come together and make the rules more like. Decide either 1 feet in or two for both college football and the NFL. Let's look at some things. Let's look at the width of the goalposts and the hash marks. And let's look at things. Let's make the rules as simple as we can. Don't stop the clock after a first down. Game gets longer. So the rules are more the same. They're being trained professionally, getting paid very well with good benefits, treated with respect, developed, have a centrally located place where you can develop their skills in the classroom and on the field. And it's a feeder system. Guys want to stay in college, like college coaches, stay in college. Guys that want to go to the NFL, stay in the NFL. Grandfather the rules in where you don't have to be full-time, but you get full-time pay. We're going to pay you full-time. Now, if you've got a business, you a lawyer, you do something else, you have a certain amount of billable hours, whatever you want to do, you can do both, and you can do it well, and you grade out well, that's fine. If you don't grade out well, you'll be given the opportunity, look, you're not grading out, you're not making the muster, and you move on. We should grade and evaluate and teach officials the same way we do coaches and players. You cut players, you fire coaches, you need to fire officials. You need to get better ones in. But it's tough to do that when you don't have enough pool of people that wants to do the job. It's a part-time job. It makes some money. It's not that effective. Provide some funding to the high school football association so high school officials can get paid more. That's going to be a part-time job. We get it. But if you pay more and you fund more money into that, then more qualified people want to start in high school. Get some really good money doing a high school game. Do one a week. Do it for 12 weeks. You can start to bring in a little nice money. You start to get good at it. Then have a training group that will study and look at how games are officiated and will contact guys. Again, Simonize the high school officiating with the college officiating with the NFL officiating. So the better ones in high school gets plucked, go into a training program. If they choose to, maybe become a college official, then an NFL official, whatever. It's done unprofessionally, and it is all due to money. And I think while I don't want to sound like a hero, spending somebody else's money, I think the game is that important. We understand the importance of players and coaches, but getting things officiated correctly are not appreciated or respected enough, and you got to put your money where your mouth is. You get what you pay for, and quite frankly, the officiating is pretty doggone good at both levels compared to what they're paying for. All right, I want to move on to a couple of other things before we call it a day. The Patriots' trade of Brandon Cooks to the Rams. Have been asked a lot about this. Look, Brandon Cooks was moved on from the Saints because of some coachability issues, not developing as a route runner, drafted first round by the Saints. They gave up on him pretty quickly. Sean Payton, not like coaching. Traded him to New England. New England wanted to see if he can help them vertically, develop, and then if they developed, then they wanted to sign him long-term. Well, they had him 1 year last year. He was okay. He got some big-time yardage at times, but he was not as productive as they thought. They decided, hey, we're not signing this guy to a long-term deal. So instead of just losing him, keeping him 1 more year and losing him and getting nothing for it, we're going to trade and we're going to package a deal to get another first-round pick. The story here that people are missing is there's something with Brandon Cooks, at least to this point, that has limited his effectiveness in the league. And now it's going to be up to the Rams, third time's a charm perhaps, to figure this out. He's a weapon. He's a talent. But you're talking about Sean Payton, Drew Brees, Bill Belichick, Tom Brady. You're struggling there, my friend. I understand Jared Goff's a good young quarterback and Sean McVay's a good young coach. I hope it settles in for him, but they've got a decision to make. Now, the Rams are all in on these moves now. Most of them are one-year deals. It's Super Bowl or bust this year. If they don't make the Super Bowl this year, it's going to be kind of a retool and a rebuild for next year. The other thing I wanted to make mention to in this part, you didn't hear anything about the Patriots being unhappy with Brandon Cooks, did you? You don't hear anything from the Patriots. I swear I'm going with this. This is why people say, oh, what's the harm in talking to the media? What's the harm in doing this and that? Let me explain something to you from a football person's standpoint. You keep all your business in-house. Nobody knows anything about your players. What happened with Malcolm Butler? No one wants to talk. They're not going to talk. They're not going to say. No one's going to say. Let me tell you why. Perfect example. Brandon Cooks is a guy the Patriots wanted to dump. They were able to dump and get a first-round pick for it, along with something else, of course, fourth-round pick. Okay? Here's why Dave Gettleman was so frustrated, the GM of the Giants, when the owner can say whatever he wants to. He owns the team. Said something with regards to, had enough with Odell Beckham and hearing about Odell Beckham, yada, yada, yada. Well, here's why. You never want to speak ill of any player. If you've got a used car to sell, you don't start by saying, hey, I've got this used car to sell. Transmission's going to go any day now. I don't have any idea where the oil leak is. I really want to get off my hand. You interested? Well, of course not. You're not interested. You want to make sure that everything is good. And yeah, look, we'd be interested in moving them. And why are you interested in moving them? Well, we got to really work in some other areas. We've got some cap issues we're trying to work through. We're trying to work through some other contracts we got, and he's really good. He's worked hard for us. Not sure he's the ideal fit. You play good cop, bad cop. The coach doesn't like this. The GM doesn't like this. Whatever. You do whatever you got to do, but you paint a good picture on it because you want to make sure. I mean, a lot of you out there that are in sales, you got to sell your product, right? You're selling your product here. It's difficult now for the Giants to get what they like for Odell Beckham. So they're going to have to take less than value if they truly want to trade them. And if they don't want to do that, which I don't expect them to do, nor would I endorse them doing that, it's a tough deal. You keep everything in-house. That's why it's important. Hey, a couple of pro day notes before we get out of here. University of Washington's pro day, Dante Pettis really ran well. Like this kid a lot as a returner and as a speed receiver. 4.45, 36-inch vertical, 6.72 pre-cone and 127 broad jump. Coming off that ankle injury, really like him as a second-round value player in this upcoming draft. Boise State had their pro day. Cedric Wilson, the receiver, did a nice job. The linebacker, one of my faves, Leighton Vander Esch, did a really good job in position drills. Outstanding. Auburn's moving their running back, Devin Barnett, to wide receiver full-time. We'll get into that a little bit more as well. Positive news out of Houston. Bill O'Brien feels that Deshaun Watson could see some OTA practice. would be phenomenal. Folks, the greatest advancement in football in the modern era is arthroscopic surgery. I can't tell you that when a guy had a knee injury, here's what happened. They cut him open. Literally had to cut through tendons, ligaments, muscle, and to go in there, had to fix it. Had to reattach everything, and the muscles had to regenerate. It's a two-year injury, and you're lucky if by the end of the second year, because it's all rehab about the muscles around it. Well, folks, they don't touch any of that anymore. They go in arthroscopically. They clean it up like a little vacuum. They get a little laser. They do this, and they attach this to that, and bingo, bango, bongo. There we go. Rehab is unbelievable. Could you imagine him getting into some OTA work? Ravens signing of RG3 has gotten some news around the league yesterday. Don't get too excited about it. It's more of an indication of the dearth of quarterbacks at the NFL level. I'm not sure he makes their 53-man roster. Want to address finally here a couple questions. Matt asks, he says, Chris, impressed by the details you provided of what scouts do reviewing NFL prospects. As fans, we've heard about the process of NFL teams hiring general managers and coaches. Can you explain what the scouting departments of teams provide to the process of hiring these head coaches and GMs, if any? Well, scouts are really not involved in the hiring process, with some exceptions. Now, you know, they're not the decision makers. However, for example, one of my responsibilities in my consulting business is coaching search. And where it got started was as a scout being on the road all the time. Yeah, you're scouting players, you're getting to know coaches, but you also are at practices, you're studying practice tape, you're studying game tape. You know who are good coaches, who are the up-and-coming guys, who have all the qualities. You've heard me give the criteria for evaluating coaches here and on the website. So in doing so, I used to keep a notebook of coaches and keep them filed by positions, guys that were going to be up and coming position coaches, up and coming coordinators, up and coming head coaches. And I used to do it. In fact, Bill Belichick used to ask me a lot. He used to call me in and say, can you give me some names of guys that would be really good in this area or that area? Jeff Fisher did it. And even like, I know Greg Williams, who's the defense coordinator of the Browns, once asked me, he gave me a form, and can you provide, you know, Greg was on his way to becoming a head coach, and he wanted a list of names. He wanted guys. He's got his guys that he knows, but he wants to know about guys, and then he can do their research. So in an indirect way, you can tap into your scouts to get a good feel for who's good coaches. Now, let me just say this. I think it's changed some because unlike when I came into the league a long time ago with a coaching background, a lot of scouts today don't have coaching backgrounds. I'm not as interested in the opinion of how good a coach is from somebody that's never coached. So if somebody's got a coaching background and is now scouting, they're going to better be able to evaluate and answer some of the questions that I'm going to have about a coach, if they've done it themselves. So I hope that gives you an idea. It depends is the real answer. And it depends on, you know, who's doing the hiring and who do they want to listen to. As a whole, my way was, again, somebody that's got a coaching background. I have some interest in getting some information. Listen, it's no secret that, I recommended Nick Saban before Nick Saban became even a head coach for the first time. And then he spent 1 year at Toledo. And then before he got the Michigan State job, I recommended him for the LSU job a long time ago, recommended him to Ohio State. This is before he went to Michigan State for the head coaching job. He was there as an assistant. So those things, if you are around it, it's like anything else, folks. If you're a good, a plant operator, a good insurance salesman, where you know people that are good in your industry because you know that industry. If you haven't done it, it's going to be harder. You look at the results, but you don't understand what creates the result and what's responsible. If you've been there and you've done it, you tend to know. So hope that gives you an idea. I know being involved, I like to involve getting ideas from everybody that I feel is valuable. So if it's something on media relations, I want to go to a media relations person or somebody that's in the media. If it's medical, I want to go to trainers and doctors. If I want to go to, you know, get how we can better organize our computer technology for scouting, well, then I want, you know, I want to use the scouting and coaching background to go with the computer background because they don't understand us and we don't understand them. So that's how you want to do it. And that's how it is done there. Now we get Chris asks about some Southern Miss guys. Folks, you got any questions? Your team will address it here as well. Southern Miss guys, question about Ito Smith, the running back. Ito, I think, is probably more, Chris, of a seventh-round guy. I like his short area burst. I think he's got good ability to run with balance, combination with power. You know, he's a smaller back. He's quick. He's got soft hands, can catch the ball outside of frame, but he doesn't have big catching radius. He catches a lot of screens. He's not getting any bigger. He's got minimal inside run power, not going to get a lot after contact, lacks the lower, the shoulder strength. He does expose the ball a little too high. But a four-year starter, as you well know, at Southern Miss, really good player. You kind of ask if he's a Dave Meggett type. Stylistically, yes. Not quite as explosive as Dave Meggett was coming out of college, but really good player. I expect him to get a chance to get drafted late. I think he'll be a good player. You mentioned a couple of receivers. Staggers, I think, is more of a priority free agent. I do like Corey Robinson. He has a chance to go maybe as high as the fifth. Now, remember, when I talk about giving a guy a fifth-round grade, doesn't mean that's where he's going to go. Remember the whole look at the draft boards up on the website. I mean, you got 53 second round grades. They're not all going in the second round. You got 18 first round grades. There's guys in the second round that have got to go in the first. So second round grading players are going to go in the first and the third round. He's got a fifth round grade, which means he could go there or he could go seventh round because there are a lot of fifth round grading players, but not that highly recruited, as you well know, coming out of Greenwood High School in Mississippi. Big guy, like the way he pulls up defenders, really physical receiver. You know, he does a good job of making the short catch into some big plays. Power stride guy, not real explosive or quick. He's a build-up speed guy. He's got good flexibility, balance, like his feet. He's very rough. He's not real explosive out of his routes. So again, necessity is the motherhood of invention, right? He's not a great separator. He has to be a good on the ball receiver. So he is that. Like his ball skills, aggressive, can be effective in the red zone. I see him as a guy that can be a fourth receiver in the NFL, a chance to make it, get into a camp. Could see him on the fade, the back shoulder. I think he can be real effective along those lines as that type of receiver. So I hope that gives you an idea and a feel for your guys at Southern Miss. Great place there. Appreciate you listening. Appreciate your question. And remember, all the latest football conversations, pro day information, draft meeting scuttlebutt, college football recruiting information, constantly updated on LandryFootball.com. Get this direct offer we got, the best offer that we've had right now, and you'll get set up for the entire season. Discount's not going to last forever. So give it a shot. We think you'll love it. We've got coming up, we're going to have the on-the-clock segment with every team and breakdowns. Got it covered for you. The draft, free agency, college football, the NFL, you name it. Submit your questions. We'll address it. Folks, we appreciate you joining us again for another week. We'll be back with you on Tuesday to break down all things football here at the Landry Football Podcast on LandryFootball.com.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
This is a Fabulous Sports Big Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Oh, you know what's coming up? The Masters is coming. I'm not buying the Tiger Woods thing at all. Is anybody else buying this? I'm not buying it. I know he did well, blah, blah. He's not going to do good in this. You know, I'd be happy if he was gone after the second round, if you know the truth. By the way, the thing I hate more than anything else, and you will see it this time, they use it almost all the time, but you will hear it all day when they go to the 16th and the 17th. They will go up there, they'll go across, they'll clap on the putting green, or they'll go up and they'll hit right into the greens. But you always hear those lame-ass birds. They are not real birds. Please don't find yourself doing this. These are not real birds. It's none of that. It's totally bullshit, the whole thing of it. I was like, somebody wrote to me and said, I'm listening to the birds. And I wrote back and I said, that's a big fake thing.
The Fabulous Sports Big can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.